Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today at the UBS Global TMT Conference, the third day. Thanks for sticking it out until the very end. My name is David Vogt, the Enterprise Hardware and Networking Analyst here at UBS. And with me today from IBM is Howard Boville, SVP and Head of IBM Hybrid Cloud. We're incredibly excited to have Howard here, given his breadth of experience and background, to give us more information and color and clarity on IBM's strategy going forward. And so, Howard, thank you again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
Great. And so, obviously, we have a lot of ground to cover, so why don't we just jump right in? And maybe a good place to start is on your background. You recently joined IBM after a fairly lengthy tenure in the financial services industry, most recently at Bank of America, where you were responsible for designing, building, and running the firm's cloud services. So maybe it would help, I think, investors to kind of level set your experience. Can you help them understand or give them a perspective on your background? For example, what your experience has been and what sort of attracted you to this role at IBM? And then maybe just as a quick follow-up, how would you sort of define your role and your responsibilities within IBM going forward?
Yeah, sure. So just to fill in a few of the points that you've already gone through. So I spent 8 years at the bank and was very much part of a very strong technology team leading the transformation. And transformation is always an ongoing thing in any organization, but the ongoing transformation to digitize the bank across its 8 lines of business, consumer through to institutional clients. And within that, the areas of responsibility I have was running, from a technology perspective, everything from what's known as development operations, so the running of the development code bases, all of the software, the hardware, and the physical data centers that we owned. And then in addition to that, the supply chain, the annual expense and budget I ran was $5 billion per annum. The two other things that I did was I ran the vendor risk management function for the bank. Banks being very heavily regulated, this was a very key function, and that covered the $10 billion of expense we had with tech and ops vendors. And then the third area was I led the future of work, so the people transformation of the 90,000 tech and ops people that we had. And I guess from that vantage point, as to why I'm at IBM, I could see a number of material gaps in the marketplace that large enterprises needed to be allowing to accelerate and their ongoing transformation to digitize their businesses and mean that they can be meaningful in the marketplace, amplified by the current pandemic. And that was particularly in the space of large enterprises and helping companies with their mission critical workloads. There was no provider in the marketplace that either because of their heritage understood the market properly or could help that transformation other than IBM. And that's why I'm now here in this role as part of the executive leadership team going through this next strategy arc under Arvind Krishna. In terms of the role I have, I lead the hybrid cloud business, but obviously as any executive, work as part of the team executing on the overall strategy across all of the assets that we have to create value for our customers. But within that component, the capability or the offering that I am leading and continue to develop is targeted against 4 marketplaces: government, financial services, telco, and healthcare. And that's to provide specialized cloud services to those industries to address the problem statement that I saw was unmapped in my old role.
Now that's an incredibly helpful background. And so maybe just drilling down a little bit, when you think about the different groups within IBM that you just sort of, mentioned that you work with, you know, as head of the IBM Hybrid Cloud and sort of the capabilities that brings to bear across the industry verticals you just laid out, where do you find yourself, or where do you think your team spends the most time in terms of collaborating with the rest of the technology and or the services that IBM brings to bear? Sort of how is that sort of that cross-functional work brought to the client or the potential client?
The key element within that approach is you've got to take an outside-in view in terms of the actual problem statements and therefore the value creation that you're creating for your customers. Obviously, IBM's got a very long heritage in terms of servicing these marketplaces and therefore very much in tune at a business level as to how you apply technology as opposed to, here's some technology, what's the question? From a development perspective, the offering management side, there's no magic to this. It's simply taking those very clear problem statements and value creation and then working on the product interlocks, so the core product development to ensure that the combination of the various assets that IBM has and our partners have as well comes together in such a form that it can meet the need. And that final, just to amplify that final point, it's not just the capabilities that clearly we have within IBM. We have partnerships with every other technology company and every other cloud service provider. But how we bring those capabilities together are predicated on our heritage of understanding these industries at a very deep level.
Right, that makes a ton of sense. And then maybe just one quick follow-up on your background and your experience. You know, you just mentioned bringing capabilities and technology and skill sets not only from IBM's heritage, but also outside relationships. You know, when you look back at your experience at a financial services firm versus your experience today, granted it's only been 6 to 7 months, what parallels or what learnings did you take away from your prior role, or what have you learned in the 6 months at IBM that you think will have sort of an impact on the business to help meet the needs of your customers going forward? You know, obviously, I would imagine that as part of a larger financial services firm, they couldn't bring to bear all of that incremental technology experience and service capability internally and externally to bear. But maybe if you can just touch on that, I think that would help investors better understand sort of what IBM brings to the table right now.
Yeah, it's a key issue that many, many technology companies face, whether they're cloud service providers or their hardware providers or software providers, is that they're world-class in terms of understanding their technology because they're technologists, but not as clear-sighted in terms of the business problems that they would face off to. So all too often now, I've had kind of cloud service providers arrive in my office and say, the answer is cloud, what's the question? And then repeat that ad nauseum in the hope that I'd figure out something for them. In my old role and in my new role, I was providing technology to a financial services institution to deliver essentially two things. One was better productivity from all of the non-personnel assets and the personnel assets that we had enabled by technology. And then the second area was to actually allow better value creation through the non-personnel assets and the personnel assets that we had. So a business translation in the context of the environment that I was operating within to apply different technologies. Therefore, and I bring that to IBM, but I'm not bringing it to IBM and then evangelically converting everybody here. This is what IBM has always done in terms of understanding the business context. That's what sets it apart in terms of how it differentiates itself in the marketplace, because it understands that productivity and value creation piece far more effectively, as I observed, in terms of consuming technologies from all the large and small tech companies.
Great. And then, you know, along those lines, a theme that we've heard repeatedly, you know, whether it's over the last several months and really more specifically at the UBS conference, is this concept of digital transformation, which obviously IBM's hybrid cloud is a key part of. And I believe in the past, management has talked about, you know, a fairly large percentage of companies and enterprises looking to accelerate their digital transformation. And I think you're in a unique situation in the sense that you just joined IBM's business during effectively the peak of this pandemic. Obviously it's been sort of trial by fire, my words, not yours, but when you think about digital transformation over the last 6 months, what you've experienced, what you've seen, and then maybe extrapolate that out over the next several years, what are you seeing that companies are looking for and what are you bringing to the table specifically? And maybe are there any sort of gating factors or hurdles that you need to help companies overcome to meet this sort of digital transformation agenda that should be pretty clearly laid out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, so you're completely correct. The pandemic has massively increased the focus of the need to be a frictionless and convenient organization, irrespective of the industry that you operate within. And the way you do that is through this kind of notion of digital transformation. But what I learned in my old role and what I've observed from customers I talk to, and I have the benefit of speaking to two or three different customers from large enterprises every single day, is where do you start on digital transformation? Do you do business process reengineering? Well, that doesn't get you there. Do you go and take the latest hype cycle of technology, whether it's cloud or AI? Well, unless you know how to apply those things, you're actually just adding more complexity to your environment and therefore adding more friction and less convenience. So what we're helping companies understand is the approach to get to digital transformation. And you start with business processes, you don't start with technology. And your business processes can be broken down into four distinct categories. One are the applications that you use to automate and make your experiences frictionless. The second is the data that fuels the insights to continue to iterate and improve at using techniques like machine learning and AI. The third is your digital supply chain, so your software as a service providers that are very embedded into your critical business processes, so cannot be left separate from any thought process associated with digital transformation. And then the fourth element is obviously your people and how you bring them along on the journey so that they become change hungry as opposed to change resistant. And this is a key thing that attracted me to IBM, and the thesis and the strategy that Arvind is driving is because we have that deep understanding of businesses and their business processes, and because we play in those four areas, applications, data, AI, and ML, the work we're doing in terms of the ecosystems that we're building, particularly on our specialist cloud for the industries that I've talked about, and the work we can do through our GBS practice led by Mark Foster in terms of how you think about the future of work and keeping your current workforce current in terms of their skill set so that they can meet the changing dynamics of how this operates is where IBM can play heavily and is resonating. My short time here, you kind of start with a conversation with a chief executive that they want to go to the cloud, and you ask that question, it's okay, well, but what will that deliver to you? Let's talk about the other dimensions as to what you need to think about. And when you do that, you can accelerate your transformation. There's many, many companies I meet with that have had a cloud-first strategy, and they've had it in 3 or 4 or 5 years, but have not actually achieved anything, no business value, no shareholder value. It's without, unless you have the integrated play that IBM can provide, you can't get to the value in a sustainable way and in an accelerated way.
You know, that's an interesting point. And so, you know, I have a couple of questions on that, but one I think that just jumps off right away is you mentioned conversations with companies and they're along their journey to cloud, but they haven't really seen any value from cloud effectively, whether it's shareholder value or economic value. And I think, you know, IBM has been public about this over the years that, you know, when you talk to clients, they see significantly more value in hybrid cloud versus sort of a public cloud-only solution. Does that tie into sort of that economic value, or is it more specific to the roadmap that you just laid out, right? We see a better set of solutions. Maybe it's cheaper to deploy a hybrid cloud and gives us the flexibility. How do we think about that from the client's perspective in terms of why maybe hybrid cloud might be more valuable to some, as you guys have communicated and intimated, than, say, the public cloud right now?
Yes. So let me kind of preface it first. So I guess I call kind of chapter one of cloud consumption as being a tremendous success for cloud-native companies that have had an idea and they've built it upon the flexibility that a cloud architecture can provide. So the kind of the Netflixes, Snapchats, and so on and so forth. And the cloud service providers that have had that business franchise that are looking for companies that are building their brand new applications onto that kind of flexible architecture, equally have had a very successful franchise in terms of that building out. Or other cloud service providers that are moving from their on-premise software to be software as a service for their productivity capabilities, have got a motion there in terms of the existing software contracts they have and how they cloudify those contracts and then start to move their applications from being on-premise to off-premise. But for enterprise, large enterprises in kind of chapter two that haven't got cloud-native applications, they've got applications written in all sorts of different ways, you can't get to value by just moving your applications off your platforms to a cloud service provider, nor can you necessarily get the value by simply modernizing those applications because the expenses just would be punishing, it would be brutal. And that's where you're actually starting to see the issue that I saw, which was I wanted to be able to consume cloud, not just from a cost perspective, because very often actually cloud is not economically less expensive at a scale that a large enterprise would operate with, but other value elements, which I'll talk about in a second, because the franchises of the general purpose cloud service providers didn't lend themselves to large enterprises and the fact that not all of their applications are brand new. In fact, the majority of them aren't. And very few of them are going to get modernized in any meaningful time frame because they're already deriving a lot of value from the investments that these companies have made into the code bases that have helped these business processes that I talked about earlier. And that marketplace is a $1 trillion marketplace. And based upon whatever market research you take from, you can hear that it's a 15% tax marketplace, so 85% to still go for, or even Andy Jassy over at AWS citing that there's only 4% of the total IT spend on cloud. The point being is that the market opportunity is around $1 trillion, and it is barely being tapped at the moment. And it's not being tapped because that spend actually is locked in large enterprises. And the simple model of moving chapter one, your applications off your computers and putting them to somebody else's, doesn't give you an economic benefit, doesn't give you the value creation opportunities that I talked about. So you don't get productivity, nor do you get value creation. But chapter two is different, and that's where IBM is can fill the space, and I could observe that from the position I had in my old role, in that you've got to take a business transformation process in. You've got to take a business process approach in. How are you going to decalcify these processes to mean that your customers can have frictionless and convenient experiences? And how you then rebuild the overall architecture in a hybrid context? And just to kind of demystify some of these terms, hybrid is really straightforward. It's on-premise IT and off-premise IT architected in such a way that you drive better productivity and you get better value creation. And economics can be an element because you'll actually simplify your environments if you do it properly and you can derive economic benefit. But the key element is to actually continue to make your organization vibrant and relevant in the changing marketplace. I covered a lot of ground there, I'm conscious. So
I think that's helpful. Yeah. And I think it leads to, you know, another conversation that we have fairly regularly with investors, you know, and this is, I don't want to jump around a little bit, but I think it ties into, you know, obviously IBM holistically has announced that they're spinning off their GTS assets. So when you think about sort of this process that you're helping clients navigate, and you bring to bear internal and external capabilities and services, how does the proposed spinoff of the GTS assets play into your thinking and maybe conversations that you're having with existing customers and potential customers going forward, as specifically as it pertains to your hybrid cloud go-to-market strategy post the spinoff?
Yes, I mean, we change is that any organization should, as market demands and market requirements change. But currently, there's a duality in terms of how you design, build, and run IT. So for your legacy environments, you need the services business capability where you've got professionals that can run on-premise, heterogeneous IT environments that haven't moved to a cloud architecture. A cloud architecture is different from the old world, the legacy world of running IT, in that you have automated many of the IT processes, a large proportion of the IT processes, so that actually the developer is abstracted away from all of that complexity and simply writes if-then-else statements, which actually deliver value for the organization. In the past, you'd you'd have developers doing as much work in terms of making the infrastructure work as you did in terms of delivering value. Cloud allows you to, if done properly, allows you to get to that new model. So as a consequence of that, Arvind has made the right strategic decision to allow both companies, as we spin the new entity off, to be able to focus on those very big markets. The $1 trillion that I mentioned for cloud, there's another $1 trillion marketplace, albeit a low growth rate, for the legacy business. And as in everything, it's about the quality of the focus you can provide to the needs of your customer that's key. So that's the rationale behind the, amongst the other things that Arvind and Jim Cavanaugh have talked about in terms of the split. Very much driven from an outside-in perspective in terms of what customers want. And if you follow what customers want and can deliver value for them, you'll, by the very nature of that approach, derive value yourself as a company.
Great. No, that's helpful. And then maybe just pivoting back to that $1 trillion opportunity that you just mentioned, specifically as it pertains to the hybrid cloud part of the business. You know, I know in the past, you know, IBM has been fairly vocal about, you know, maybe 20 to 25% of workloads have moved to the cloud in some capacity. So can you help us frame this $1 trillion opportunity maybe with a little bit more granularity, how that plays out over the next 3 to 5 years? What's addressable, potentially what's not addressable? Is there a way for an outsider or an investor to think about, you know, how much of that market opportunity is legitimately, effectively in play for IBM's hybrid cloud business over the next couple of years?
Sure. So the $1 trillion breaks down between a mix of services, software, and hardware, which IBM has through GBS, our software business, our cloud business, and obviously our mainframe, and then see that the quantum business that is currently in research but will be in market within the next 5 years. And by bringing those together as an integrated capability, that's how we can deliver value in this chapter two of cloud. In terms of how much is addressable, it's the pace by which companies can drive the transformation across their business lines. And as I mentioned earlier, that's been accelerated as a consequence of the pandemic. And as you will see with GDP, there'll be a peak up, it'll peak back up. There'll be a material growth in GDP to get back to some degree of normality once we get through the other side of the pandemic on a global basis. And as that happens, obviously a consequence in terms of making investment decisions will change in terms of how companies think about that. So we'll ride that wave, but we'll take share in terms of the enterprise space that the Chapter 1 providers have not been able to penetrate because their heritage and their business models aren't in tune in terms of actually how you do provide true digital transformation. Now, where we sit in terms of what that means in specific numbers, everything's out of the window in the pandemic, so I couldn't give you anything in terms of on that. And perhaps, Eric, you could but that's the expectation that we have, and the point of differentiation to get us into a place actually where we're driving material growth with the capabilities that we have to meet this need.
Well, maybe I'll ask it a different way without getting into the specific revenue opportunity numbers. But earlier in your comments, you mentioned obviously the focus is on more regulated industries, and obviously, you know, you've announced relationships, whether it's in the telecom industry, the financial services industry, that are sort of natural extensions or targets for your cloud strategy. Is there something unique about these regulated industries? Is it just simply the regulation that requires a more hybrid cloud-centric approach versus the public cloud? If you think back years ago, obviously the view was a lot of financial services records and applications could never reside in the public cloud, right? They would need to remain on-premise for those specific regulations. Is that sort of the driving those industry verticals that you laid out at the beginning, whether it's telecom, government, healthcare, for example, the driving factors and how you're thinking about gaining share and growing within this $1 trillion opportunity? Are those the most natural sort of targets?
Yeah, let me kind of try and get a simple explanation as to how IBM is incredibly differentiated from any other, not just cloud service providers, it's the integrated offerings, but the capabilities are built into cloud. So in financial services, from a regulatory perspective, laws, rules, and regulations, all the global regulators, you need to be able to demonstrate that you have parity of control relative to those laws, rules, and regulations in terms of your internal provision of IT services in the same way as you have for external. So what does that mean? You need to be able to show that all of the controls that you have, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's data privacy, whether it's identity and access management, whether it's technical operational risk in a business resiliency perspective, that control framework needs to be a parity with what you consume from third parties. And therefore, it's difficult for those industries to actually capture the innovation that we've talked about with cloud because of the overhead of having those parity of controls and all the checks and balances with those third-party vendors to demonstrate that. And on chapter one, if you want to consume cloud services from any other company from other than IBM, you will get their cloud, and then you'll have to dedicate very specialist resources to build those controls in an auditable fashion, in a sustainable way, into that cloud. And then if you want to use another cloud, that you need another team of people or increase the size of that team to do the same for the other cloud service provider, and then the third company. And then also what you need to do for your supply chain is to be able to demonstrate parity of controls. So every software as a service provider, you need teams of people to be able to assess, are they have parity of controls in terms of how you run your environments. What is different with the IBM Cloud, and IBM have been building this for the past 2 years, and it went to market for financial services in June of this year, is all of those controls are built into the cloud. So when you consume IBM's cloud, you don't have to build a team of people to come put those controls in. They're there. And you don't need a team of people to sustain them because IBM, on a rolling basis, as the changes come through on a rolling basis, are built into the actual cloud. So that means that you can ensure that you've got the right level of risk management because you've got the parity of controls on your IBM cloud as you have internally. But what it also does, it means you can massively increase your pace of digital transformation. There's not a single financial institution I don't talk to that says we're cloud first and we've been cloud first for 4 years, 5 years. Choose your number. Okay, how many of your processes or your workloads have moved? Next to none. Why is that the case? Because we have to build these dedicated teams of people to build these controls in, and it's just very difficult to sustain it. With IBM, the controls are there. So you can start your digital transformation on your digital transformation, not making the thing secure. And here's the second point that's really important, which is if you're a software as a service provider and you land on the IBM cloud, you also inherit all of those controls. And that's got dual value. It's value to the bank or the financial institution because they know that that third party has parity of controls because they're on the control framework we built into our cloud. But secondly, it's got value for the software as a service provider because in the past, or the way it currently runs, if they don't sit on the IBM cloud, is they have to build these controls in as well. So a lot of labor to build these controls in case basis. You land on the IBM cloud where it's built in, everybody inherits that, and you can focus on actually delivering business value and business transformation. A complete game changer in terms of how companies can actually get to the innovation very, very quickly. As a financial institution, and it's how third-party suppliers can actually very quickly sell into financial institutions. In the old way, in the current way, it takes about 18 months to 2 years to get onboarded as a new SaaS provider. It's an exercise in moral intestitude as opposed to anything else. To get
that right.
If you land on the IBM cloud, you can trade as soon as you're on that platform.
Interesting. So basically, complexity, cost and regulatory considerations are critical in terms of companies and or industries wanting to use this solution. So, I mean, that makes a tremendous amount of sense. But how has Red Hat helped in this journey over the last couple of years? You know, how has it strengthened your position and allow you to basically address some of these complex challenges that companies and industries face that you're addressing?
Yeah, so it's tremendously important asset and capability. And how is it? It's because of productivity and value creation, the two things that kind of drove my priorities in my old role and why my priorities in my current role. So if you're working on the premise that you're going to be hybrid, it's going to be on-premise and off-premise, so you're going to use a cloud, and you don't want to be locked into any particular cloud service provider, you don't want these various heterogeneous, these different environments to run, which then just adds to complexity and adds to risk and adds to cost. Red Hat OpenShift is that universal tool that as a developer, you can develop once and then run it anywhere, and you're not locked into any of the other cloud service providers. Now, the question I get asked, and I'll ask it for you and answer it, is, well then you're locked into Red Hat OpenShift. Well, you're not locked in because you can get off any platform, but it's far easier getting off OpenShift than it will be to get off a proprietary stack of cloud provider A and the proprietary stack of cloud provider B, because you are super stickily in a very sticky way caught into those environments. So you have to make one choice and make the choice that gives you the most optionality, including if you want you to get off it. And that's what Red Hat does. It gives you that ability to have optionality in terms of the clouds that you would use. But what it also does, in addition to that, is it allows you to get better productivity from your developers. Because if you are going to use multiple clouds, which you should and do need to in certain industries, the industries we're facing off to, you can't be tied to one cloud service provider because of concentration risk, and therefore what it would mean from resiliency. You don't want a set of developers that only understand one cloud provider and then another set of developers that work on another. That's incredibly inefficient as a CIO or as a chief executive as to how you think about that. OpenShift allows you to have one team of developers that understand one way of developing and then promoting code to the resources they use, which means you get better productivity from your developers and therefore better value creations. So it's an incredible asset for businesses to kind of use this universal tool that means you get better productivity from your development community and far more optionality in terms of the resources that you would use from other third parties.
Now, that's helpful to understanding the workflow and the relationship between the two different entities. And I'd be remiss to not ask this question since this is a global TMT conference. I know a lot of the similar investors that look at IBM and the cloud also spend time on telecom. And I know this is sort of a nitty-gritty question, but something that our team was interested in hearing about. I know you just announced a similar relationship or partnership with for hybrid cloud to focus on the telecom industry, and you brought to bear 30 to 40 different industry vendors. Can you kind of talk through what that solution or what the potential solutions look like and how everyone sort of is adding their own skill set, capability, and technology competency to the solution and what needs are being needed to be met across telecom? It's a little bit different than financial services, obviously. It doesn't have the same regulatory overhang, but I'd just be interested in learning a little bit more about that particular venture.
Hey, sure. And the first thing I preface as well is obviously I had a long, good career in financial services. Prior to that, I had a long and deep career in telecommunications. So I understand this space incredibly well. As with every capability you bring together, we'll have our own assets that we build, but the ecosystem, the 40 partners that we're working with, is to co-develop with those groups as well. And the discipline is the same approach as I mentioned in terms of understanding where we can deliver value relative to business need, and then partner with the appropriate technology company to co-develop. So this isn't just about go to market, sell to, sell through. Very limited value there for customers in that approach. This is about truly understanding the assets that these partners have and combining them with our capabilities to meet customer needs. So what are those kind of needs? Well, they can range from fairly mundane but essentially important things in terms of how do you ensure and assure that the capability that you provide operates at the highest level of availability, performance, and capacity, so it's not causing issues and diminishing a digital frictionless experience. So core development around that. On a business support perspective, how do you ensure that it can link into the business processes that a telecommunications provider may have to allow them to improve their processes and therefore improve the quality of their experience? So a big range around the fixed line and 4G-based technologies in terms of what we're providing. And then as we look at 5G and what that can mean in terms of the deterministic high bandwidth capabilities you get from 5G, which is really an enterprise grade capability, whereas 4G was consumer. We have an edge capability, which is satellite, which is an offering in the marketplace that allows you to manage resources at the edge, whether you're in a branch, in a financial services organization, or in a healthcare providing context, or whether it's devices that you are connecting. You need to do that in a secure and a way that actually ensures that it operates at the highest level. Security in the case of IoT is still a very nascent area, but one that we've been working at some time to ensure that we can offer the highest levels of security as you go from having a million plus devices connected to an enterprise to a billion plus. Every one of those points of connection, a billion plus, is a point that a bad person can get into your environment. So that's the capabilities that we've been building, very clear sighted in actually the business problems that we're solving for and the value we're delivering for our customers, but also very humble in the context that we have to work with a range of different partners to make that come real.
Great. Now that's exciting. We're looking forward to learning more about this and seeing that developed. I think we're running a little bit tight on time. I just wanted to maybe just take a step back and, you know, give you an opportunity. You know, when you think about your business going forward, what are investors missing or not focused on with regards to the hybrid cloud story? Any sort of takeaways that you'd want to leave investors with to kind of just summarize kind of how you think about the business over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, it's our responsibility to ensure we kind of get the right frame of reference. But to view IBM's hybrid cloud strategy in a frame of reference against a case-by-case comparison against a cloud service provider, A or cloud service provider B or C, is the wrong frame of reference. Their businesses are based upon where they've come from, and that's their heritage, and that's what they've had their market growth from the markets that they're in. Our heritage is large enterprises managing and running mission-critical workloads to support their business processes and the associated data. That's the space that's 96% untapped as yet. And it's untapped because the other providers don't have the capabilities or the knowledge in terms of how you deliver value there. IBM does, and in the pivot that Arvind is driving, we're aligning our assets and our heritage and our capability to play into that space. So it's just human nature to have a set of heuristics where you compare and contrast against the particular leader because it's got a similar name in its title, cloud. The approach that we have is into that 96% market that's untapped, where we know we can deliver value. We'll just do it in this form factor, which gives you the benefits of cloud, but really it's the business transformation using cloud as an enabler. Hopefully I was clear there.
I think that's a great summary of sort of the opportunity and the strategy of IBM's hybrid cloud going forward. Obviously, I think we are about out of time. So, Howard, I want to just thank you again for taking the time today. This was incredibly helpful and useful, and I hope investors got something out of it and look forward to hopefully doing this again next year in person under better circumstances. But again, just wanted to thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the way that's ended. Really appreciate it.
All right. Great. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day.